Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Black holes, the cosmos, space and time travel, science and technology. Brought to you by theoretical physicist, futurist, popularizer of science, and world-renowned author, Professor Michio Kaku.
At GCNLive.com.
This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Today, once again, we're very delighted to have with us an alien hunter, as he calls himself, Dr. Seth Shostak, a senior astronomer at the famous SETI Institute in Mountain View, California. And so today we're going to be talking about, believe it or not, talking to aliens in outer space. Do they exist? If they exist, how do we communicate with them? So we'll be talking about the world of science and how scientists view the question of intelligent life in the universe. And if you want to know more about Science Fantastic, go to my website, mkaku.org. And on Facebook, we have 4.5 million fans on Facebook. And my latest book, The God Equation, The Quest for a Theory of Everything, I'm proud to say last month, hit the New York Times bestseller list, the Amazon bestseller list, and the independent bookstores bestseller list. And it's about, well, what I do for a living. That is, as a hobby, I like to engage the public, but why does the city of New York pay my paycheck? To work on something called string theory. You see, for thousands of years, philosophers, scientists have wondered, is there a unifying theme, a paradigm, a principle that you can unite this vast universe of ours, perhaps into a single equation? And back 2,000 years ago, the great geometer Pythagoras said, it's music. Music is the only paradigm rich enough to explain the stars, the planets, the motions of objects all around us. It's music. Well, unfortunately, the Roman Empire fell apart. And for 1,000 years, there was darkness, superstition, magic. But recently, we actually do have a candidate for this God equation. Remember that Einstein spent the last 30 years of his life chasing after a theory of everything, and he failed. But now we're going back 2,000 years to the work of Pythagoras. When Pythagoras saw a lyre string, he said, the longer the string, the lower the note. And then he saw a blacksmith's shop, and he realized that the longer the sword, the lower the vibration of that sword. And he said, aha, it's mathematics, the mathematics of music that can explain the universe. Well, today we know that the universe is mainly made of atoms, but what are these atoms? Why do we have so many subatomic particles when we smash atoms apart? Well, we think they're nothing but vibrations on a tiny rubber band. Think of a tiny rubber band. How many frequencies can you make on a rubber band? Infinite number. Well, one set of vibrations you could call an electron. Another vibration you could call a neutrino. Another vibration you would call a quark. In fact, you can categorize all these vibrations using something called string theory. And in string theory, physics is nothing but the laws of harmony. The laws of harmony on vibrating strings. We know that chemistry can be expressed as the melodies you can write on vibrating strings. The universe is a symphony of strings, and the mind of God that Albert Einstein wrote eloquently about for the last 30 years of his life is cosmic music resonating through hyperspace. Well, speaking about hyperspace, today we're going to talk about, well, science fiction, what's out there in the universe, because if an advanced civilization, very advanced civilization, maybe 100,000, a million years more advanced than us, if they do exist out there in the universe, maybe, just maybe, they'll be able to exploit string theory to create wormholes, gateways, pathways through higher dimensions through parallel universes. We're talking about the multiverse idea, which is now one of the dominant theories in cosmology. Inflation theory is the only theory which so far has survived all experimental checks. And inflation theory says the Big Bang can happen over and over again, giving us a multiverse of universes. And who knows, maybe one day perhaps we'll make contact with one of these civilizations. Well, with us today is one of the world's leading authorities on that question, Dr. Seth Shostak. He is a senior astronomer at the SETI Institute in Mountain View, California. That's the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. He is the author of a book, Confessions of an Alien Hunter, A Scientist's Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. He got his bachelor's at Princeton University, PhD at Caltech, and has written hundreds of articles both in the scientific literature and in the popular press. So, Seth, glad you could be on Science Fantastic once again.
It's fantastic to speak with you again, Michio.
Okay, well, first question for you is, go back to when you were a kid, a youth. What inspired you to become a scientist and especially a physicist?
Well, I think it was, you know, it happened at about the age of eight. I think that that's an age when most kids get interested in something. And I was interested in, well, lots of things, electronics and, you know, building stuff. But I was particularly interested in astronomy because, you know, it seemed to explain a lot of things. And that's, of course, true for with physics. Physics, in a way, explains astronomy. But I didn't realize that at the time. It just seemed like a very interesting thing, something that was undoubtedly augmented by the fact that every weekend my parents would drive me to the local movie theater and I'd watch another mutant creature from outer space take on humans.
And what then steered you in the direction of becoming an alien hunter, that is, using the laws of physics to see whether there's anyone out there in the universe?
Yeah, I think it did. I mean, I think most people, you know, like to work in a field that they found interesting when they were very young. I don't think that your interests change that much. If you were interested in something at age 10, you'd be interested in at age 50, whatever. So, yeah, I mean, it was somewhat accidental. I was working in the field of astronomy, studying galaxies, seeing how fast they spin, stuff like that, which in the end turned out to be an important thing. But at some point, I suggested that maybe we could use these radio telescopes to try and find ET. That was not a new idea with me, of course. It had already been done by some people. But I just thought it was interesting to see if we could actually find the kind of aliens I saw on the silver screen every weekend.
Now, when we think of a professor, we think of someone who's erudite, learned, cautious about making outlandish statements. However, when we talk about aliens, sometimes you get the giggle factor. People roll their eyes up into the heavens and start to giggle and laugh. Do you encounter this, or do you think that, well, that's just part of the game?
Well, I do occasionally encounter it, but not very often. I think the perception is that it's, you know, more often a suggestion, namely that there might be aliens out there, a suggestion that does indeed cause people to you know, kind of dismiss it immediately, particularly if you go a little farther and say, not only do I think they're up there, but we're going to try and find out by doing an experiment. But honestly, I think surveys show this, too, by the way, that, you know, the majority of people, certainly around 80%, believe that aliens exist. So the giggle factor, I think people laugh at the giggle factor because it's called the giggle factor now, and I don't know that so many of them dismiss the whole field of investigation simply because, you know, well, aliens, that's just something in the movies or on TV.
Okay, well, let's try to put some science and numbers on this whole question. Let's talk about Drake's equation, because that, of course, is one of the touchstones by which all of us could then begin to seriously look at the possibility of aliens in outer space. So what is Drake's... Oh, let's take a short commercial break. But after the break, we're going to try to calculate how many alien civilizations are there in our backyard in the Milky Way galaxy. With the Kepler satellite, we'll be able to get a census, a census of the Milky Way galaxy as to how many Earth-like planets are out there. Anyway, this is Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Our special guest is Dr. Seth Shostak. You've probably seen him on TV talking about aliens in outer space. So stay tuned as we talk about how to find an extraterrestrial civilization in our backyard. Stay tuned.
Airlines have just reduced their prices even more. Book 30 days in advance and save big.
Want the absolute lowest prices on your airline tickets? Then call the low-cost airlines travel hotline right now for prices so low we can't publish them anywhere. The only way to access our low rates and save up to 70% is to call. Save hundreds on your vacation tickets by calling right now. You can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go, and pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
802-341-4535. 802-341-4535. 802-341-4535. That's 802-341-4535.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from wallofire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Wallofire.com.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Do the letters IRS give you anxiety? I'm Dan Pilla. I've defended people from the IRS for more than 40 years. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, created the tax resolution industry and is responsible for helping hundreds of thousands of people. It can help you, too. If you're a non-filer or facing IRS enforcement right now, your case is unique. You need real help, not cookie-cutter advice. My clients get my personal attention. Buy my book at danpilla.com and get a free consultation directly with me. That's danpilla.com. Let's start solving your tax problem right now.
Brought to you by Professor Michio Kaku. This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. With us today is Dr. Seth Shostak, Senior Astronomer at the SETI Institute in Mountain View, California. That's the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. And so we're going to talk about, well, the probability that one day perhaps we'll meet a civilization in outer space that's not human. Well, let's start with Drake's equation because, you know, we're scientists. We want to quantify things rather than simply look at the universe and be paralyzed. So what is Drake's equation? And, of course, it's been modified over the last several decades. So what is Drake's equation?
Well, it came from a guy by the name of Drake, actually, Frank Drake. And Frank Drake is still actually pretty active in the field of SETI. But he had done the first modern SETI experiment. He used an antenna at a radio observatory in West Virginia in 1960. And, you know, it was a very modest experiment. They didn't build any special equipment. They just adapted some equipment that was already at the observatory. Maybe that was to avoid getting the giggle factor on this experiment, actually. But in any case, it became a very popular news item that there was this guy, Frank Drake, who was trying to find radio signals that aliens might be broadcasting. So people at the National Science Foundation asked Dr. Drake, can you have a meeting, a professional meeting, to discuss whether this is a worthwhile thing to do or is it just nonsense? And he had that meeting in 1961. There were about a dozen scientists present. One of them actually won the Nobel Prize during the meeting. That was fairly exciting. But as an agenda for that meeting, Frank Drake cooked up this equation that, you know, it just tries to estimate how many societies are out there right now sending signals we could pick up. You know, and if, obviously, if that number is large, then it pays to try and find the signals. And if that number is very, very small, then probably you ought to think about doing something else for a living.
Okay, and so he made an estimate. So what are some of the factors involved, and how have these factors changed now that we have the Kepler satellite, test satellite, and the Webb telescope to be shot into outer space? What are the different factors in the Drake's equation?
Well, there are seven factors in the Drake equation. You multiply them all together, and you get this number N, which is the number of societies out there that are broadcasting. But the logic of the equation is very simple. It's the same as the logic of trying to figure out, well, how many people are attending, I don't know, Columbia University? Total number of students, right? And you could, you know, do that by finding out, well, what is the admission rate? How many freshmen are admitted every year? And then multiply that by the number of years, say four, that they stay there before they graduate and go get a job somewhere. So that's the logic of the equation. So there, as they say, seven terms, but the first six are just to estimate how many new societies are born in the Milky Way galaxy every year that have the ability to build radio transmitters, for example, and get on the air so you could hear them. And then you multiply that by a factor called L, which is just the lifetime that they, you know, keep their transmitter working, and that would give you the number of transmitting civilizations. So the first, you know, the six terms are things like, well, how many stars are born every year, and what fraction of those have planets, and what fraction of those planets produce life, and how many of them develop, you know, Pythagoras and other scientists so that you can eventually develop technology to broadcast and so forth. And then L is just how many years they stay on the air. So that's the logic of the equation.
Okay, and so after you put in all these factors, what number do you get? Ta-da. I mean, what's the final equation, and what's the final number you get with reasonable estimates as to how many stars are there, how many stars have planets, how many planets have oceans, blah, blah, blah. What's a reasonable estimate?
Yeah, well, I hate to admit this, Michio, but you can get essentially any number you want. I mean, because so many of these factors are still unknown. It's been, what, 60 years since the Drake equation was, you know, written down, and we still don't know many of the factors. And because you're just multiplying this whole string of factors, if there are one or two or three, and there are at least three or four, that you really don't have any idea what their value is, such as what fraction of planets that develop life will produce life that, you know, has clever Greeks or, you know, clever people anywhere that can develop science. I mean, we have no idea. The only example we have is here on Earth. So the number that comes out the bottom is pretty much what you have baked into the factors. So, you know, it isn't terribly useful in that sense. But, you know, in the last 60 years, we have nailed down at least one more factor, and that is what fraction of stars have planets. And, you know, we now know that percentage is essentially 100%. You know, you find planets around every star that you look, or almost every star you look. So at least we know that planets are common, and that, in a sense, is the only observational novelty in the last 60 years for the Drake equation.
Well, given the fact that on average, every star we see at night has a planet going around it, and a certain fraction, who knows, maybe 20% or so, have Earth-like planets going around them, don't you get a number that says that there could be billions of planets like Earth?
Well, you could. I mean, the number of planets in the Milky Way galaxy is roughly a trillion with a T. I mean, it's a lot. It's 1,000 billion, whatever. And, you've got trillions of other galaxies, each with a trillion planets. So the number of planets is, as they say, astronomical. That's not the limiting problem or the limiting factor. The limiting factor is actually not the astronomy. There are plenty of planets. And while most of them might be bad, like Neptune, as it is for life, I mean, you can't believe they're all bad. If you buy a trillion lottery tickets, they're not all bad. Some of them are winners. So, that's actually not the problem. The problem is, I give you a million or a billion or a trillion planets that are kind of like the Earth, with water and atmospheres and, all that stuff. What fraction of them will ever produce an intelligent species? And we really have no idea. I mean, you think, oh, well, it must be one. It must be 100% because look at what happened here. But, you have to keep in mind, well, maybe that rock that wiped out the dinosaurs and, two-thirds of everything else. What if it had arrived 20 minutes later? It would have missed the Earth, and the dinosaurs would still be romping through Central Park.
Okay, now let's talk about the SETI project. What do you guys do when you try to hunt for civilizations in outer space? How is it done?
Yeah, well, the traditional way is to do exactly what Frank Drake did in 1960, and that's to use big antennas. They're called radio telescopes by, astronomers. And you just point them at some nearby stars, which you presume have planets, and in many cases you know they have planets, and, just sort of tune as much of the radio dial as you can, and see if you pick up any signals. Straightforward, okay? It doesn't require going anywhere. You can't go meet them in space or anything like that, not with our technology. But at least you could pick up signals that would tell you that there's somebody out there. Recently, I think there's more attention being paid, and I think justifiably, to another approach, which is to say, okay, maybe there are a million societies in the Milky Way. Frank Drake thinks there are at least 10,000. Fine. Let's just assume that there are a lot of them. Some of them, as you mentioned at the top of the show, will be way ahead of us technologically. So they might be doing something really dramatic, like rearranging stars in their neighborhood or building giant, what are called Dyson spheres around their solar systems. I mean, they might be doing stuff that you could actually find with an ordinary mirror and lens telescope and look for that. And so it's kind of, whatever people think is a promising approach.
Okay, so after all this money, after all these radio telescopes, what have we found? Have we found anything that even resembles a signal from an extraterrestrial civilization, or is there simply silence out there? What have we found after all these decades?
Well, it's certainly not silence. I remember sitting at the telescope down in Puerto Rico, the Arecibo antenna, which is 1,000 feet across, and obviously a very sensitive telescope. Unfortunately, it collapsed a couple of months ago. But when we were using that to, scrutinize nearby stars, I saw a signal coming in approximately every 10 seconds. No lack of signals, but, of course, those signals are all being produced by humans. So it's not so interesting. I mean, telecommunications satellites or radar setups on the island, all that kind of stuff was making noise that looked just like the kind of signal we're hunting. So you have to be able to, filter all that out, and we did. Is there anything left when you do that? Well, the easy answer is no, but it's not entirely no because we just recently picked up a signal from the nearest star system that might be in.
Seth, let's take a short commercial break. But after the break, we're going to continue a discussion with Dr. Seth Shostak, senior astronomer at the SETI Institute. And we are talking about alien hunting as a branch of science. This is Dr. Michio Kaku for Science Fantastic. Stay tuned as we continue a discussion of what's out there. Are we alone in the universe? Stay tuned.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNLive.com today.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
New Year's Eve celebrations are taking place around the world despite the Omicron surge. There were no New Year's Eve fireworks in central London, but some people gathered at the Shard skyscraper to ring in 2022. For those spending New Year's Eve in Times Square, things are a bit different. Outgoing NYPD Commissioner Dermot Shea.
Let's have fun. Let's do it in a safe environment. You're going to wear a mask, and that's the expectation for everyone.
Massive Colorado wildfires spread by powerful winds burned several hundred homes and forced evacuations of two Denver suburbs. Colorado Governor Jared Polis.
Gusts of 100, 110 miles an hour can and have moved this fire down a football field in a matter of seconds.
This is USA Radio News. Violence broke out in the Germantown section of Philadelphia, injuring six people after more than 65 shots were heard. Initial reports suggest the shooter hasn't been identified, and the incident is still under investigation. A 21-year-old woman was shot multiple times in the abdomen and was rushed to the hospital, where she remains in critical condition. Five men under 30 were also injured in the gunfire. Most students in Michigan's Oxford schools will be heading back to classrooms on Monday after losing a month of learning.
All the buildings in the Oxford Community School District will reopen Monday except the high school. That's where a 15-year-old student opened fire on November 30th and killed four teens. Superintendent Tim Throne addressed parents in an online video describing the January 3rd reopenings as the next, quote, steps in our community's journey toward healing, unquote. In the USA Radio Midwest Bureau, I'm Katie Lewis.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
Have you heard the warning from the dead doctors don't lie guy? I'm talking about Dr. Joel Wallach. He says if you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol or high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, or other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. That's what he says. He has a free lecture revealing what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. And it's all in his free lecture called Deadly Recipe. You want it free? Call him toll free at 855-79-YOUNG. You ready? 855-79-YOUNG. Dr. Joel Wallach, the dead doctors don't lie guy, says there's no reason why we shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there.
Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. In this hour, we're talking about hunting for alien civilizations in outer space. But before we begin, let me say once again, thank you so much for supporting Science Fantastic. Because of you, the listeners out there, my latest book, The God Equation, sailed onto the New York Times bestseller list. And it's all about, well, trying to find a theory of everything. And everything includes even science fiction. Because Because if you do have a theory of everything, you have a theory of space and time, and you have the ability to probe bizarre solutions of Einstein's equations. You realize that Einstein's equations allow for time travel. These are called CTCs, closed time-like curves. And there's even a branch of theoretical physics devoted to looking at whether or not we can stabilize these time machines. That's right. Einstein himself realized that his equations allow for time travel, but, and this is the huge but, are they stable? Will they blow up? Will graviton corrections to the time machine explode the machine? Can you really go back into the past? Well, for that, you need a higher theory. Einstein's equations allow for time travel, but they do not allow you to calculate the stability of these time machines. What about quantum corrections? Graviton corrections to these time machines. This is what Stephen Hawking actually looked into. He was one of the first serious physicists to actually calculate what kinds of instabilities a time machine would have. Well, anyway, to find out more about this, get a copy of my latest book, now a New York Times bestseller, The God Equation. Well, with us today is Dr. Seth Shostak of the SETI Institute, graduate of Princeton University, PhD from Caltech, author of hundreds of articles both in the scientific literature and the popular press. His book is called Confessions of an Alien Hunter, A Scientist's Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. Well, when we left off, we were talking about whether or not we have found any signal out there which indicates the presence of intelligent life. So tell us about that. You said that recently there was an interesting signal.
Yes, in the past couple of months, the group known as Breakthrough Listen, which is a group of people mostly, well, some of them are at the SETI Institute, but mostly at the University of California, Berkeley, across the bay from where I'm speaking to you here, they were using a radio telescope in Australia, the Parkes Radio Telescope, which is about, I don't know, 4 or 5 hour drive west of Sydney, and they pointed it at the nearest other star to us than the sun. It's called Proxima Centauri, and its distance is a mere 4.3 light years from downtown New York. So that's, four light years isn't very far in astronomy, but it is very far for a rocket. If we wanted to send anybody to Proxima Centauri with NASA's fastest rocket, it would take 75,000 years, and people would object to eating peanuts the whole way. So, we're not going to the stars, even to the nearest ones. But they pointed this antenna at this star, and they picked up a signal that looked pretty much like what you'd expect from a transmitter. Now, is it really ET, or have we been fooled again by, our own activities? And they have been doing follow-up tests on that, and it looks like it's not for real, which is, of course, disappointing. It would be lovely to know that there were some aliens in the nearest other star system, even though, a priori, you might think, well, that's not terribly probable.
Now, you're on record as claiming that within, 20 years or so, we may actually make contact with an alien civilization. So let's take a short commercial break. And after the break, I'll ask you that question. Do you still hold to the idea that within a few decades, we will make contact with an alien civilization? Once again, this is Dr. Michio Kaku for Science Fantastic. Stay tuned as we talk to the author of Confessions of an Alien Hunter. Stay tuned.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Hi, Peter Vaccaro for ParanormalDate.com. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that by signing up for free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People are interested in the strange, the unusual, mysteries, ghosts, UFOs, and the afterlife, and so much more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people seeking a viable alternative to the other dating services. You can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com, and if you decide you like it and want to connect with people, use the code GEORGE for a substantial discount. Mark Rawlings, president of ParanormalDate.com, says so many people hunger to share their experiences about the paranormal, the unexplainable, or the afterlife, and so much more, and this is the source for them to meet and share that common interest. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com, ParanormalDate.com, and use the code GEORGE if you decide to connect with someone you like.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Now with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano colloidal silver from Americare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. Americare's nano colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, Americare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase nano colloidal silver now at immunesupportnow.com. That's immunesupportnow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.
By Professor Michio Kaku. This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. This is a program that talks about the cutting edge of scientific issues. And with us today is Dr. Seth Shostak, Senior Astronomer at the SETI Institute. That's the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. And so the question is, what's out there? Now, you're on record as saying that, well, who knows for sure, but in a few decades, we will make contact with an alien civilization. Do you still hold to that?
Yeah, this is one of those cases where you should be careful what you wish for. I was giving a talk in Europe, actually, and it was there were a whole bunch of students in the audience, and they, of course, wanted to know, well, you guys have been looking for a while and haven't found anything. Are you ever going to find anything? And the real answer to that is we don't know, but you should at least try. But I, more as an offhand remark as anything else, I said, look, I'll bet you guys all a cup of Starbucks, I said, that we'll find something in the next 24 years, I guess it was. Now, that's been almost 10 years ago now. I made that statement. So I'm kind of saying that, well, around, 2035 or somewhere like that, we might find something. And you might ask, well, why did I do that other than to wake up the audience? The reason I did it is because of something known as Moore's Law, which just is basically an economic law of the Silicon Valley here, which says that every 2 years you can walk into your favorite computer shop and buy a machine at the same price as you paid for your other machine, the older one, and get twice as much compute power. That applies also to SETI experiments because so much of the experiment depends on computers. So I figured by the 2030s, more or less, we would have looked at about 1 million star systems, and it seemed to me that if you look at 1 million, you might get a hit. So that was the basis of it. I may have to buy a lot of coffee.
Okay. Well, we had one guest on Science Fantastic who believes in the METI project, that not only should we listen to radio broadcasts from civilizations in space, but we should advertise our existence and say, here we are, these are our coordinates, come and drop by and visit us and have some coffee. Now, some people, like the late Stephen Hawking, were very uncomfortable about this, because after all, what happened to the Aztecs when Montezuma thought that Cortez was a god, but actually Cortez was a bloodthirsty pirate who then collapsed the entire Aztec civilization. So what are your thoughts about whether or not we should advertise our existence rather than simply listen for signals from outer space?
Yeah, well, it has become a controversy of sorts, and it does depend on the argument that if you do broadcast, you might be endangering, you know, all of society. And maybe that's true to say that some societies out there are not, as Carl Sagan used to think, all peaceful because they're so advanced. I don't know that that makes you more peaceful or not. I mean, maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. But maybe you shouldn't take the risk of advertising, hey, here we are, because you don't know what's out there. Well, that sounds pretty logical, but in practice, it doesn't make any sense because, you know, we've only had radio for about 100 years. Our most powerful transmitters, which are radar sets, the most powerful transmitters could produce a signal even at the distance of nearby stars that would be fairly easy to pick up by, you know, any advanced aliens. And so we're already broadcasting. And to say, well, we better not aim any antennas at the sky because we don't know what's out there, would kind of limit the future activities of humanity. I don't think it's a good idea. And besides, we've been transmitting for, you know, at least since the Second World War, signals that a really advanced society would have no trouble in finding. So we're already advertising our presence.
Okay, now other people say that radio, that's so passé. I mean, the aliens out there could be thousands of years more advanced than us. They could be part robotic, for example. They could perhaps have merged with artificial intelligence. They're super beings, and here we are thinking that they're just like us. Primitive biological species using radio to communicate. Come on, give me a break. So what are your thoughts about people who say they were barking at the wrong tree, assuming that they're just like us from 1950, while even on the Earth, radio is falling out of disfavor in some certain sectors. People are going into the Internet, so on and so forth. So what are your thoughts about those people who say they were barking up the wrong tree?
Well, I mean, all I can say is, yeah, you could be right, but give us another tree.
We have to take another short commercial break, but after the break, we'll try to answer that question, and also the big question, why don't they visit us? Okay, you're listening to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Give us a call. The hotline number is 612-564-8135. Leave your name, call letters of the radio station or website you're listening to, and the city you're calling from, and bingo, maybe you could get on 100 radio stations that carry Science Fantastic. Stay tuned.
What if people always acted the same way they do when they're driving their cars?
Good morning, Mrs. Blanchard. How may I help you?
I'd like to cash this check.
Sure.
I'll just get my pen
Come
here.
Come on, lady. Get a move on.
Goodness.
Where'd you learn to bank anyway?
Ooh.
Whoa, don't you give me that look.
It sure wouldn't be a very friendly place.
What kind of candy do you want, sweetie?
This. No, this.
Pick something already. Come on, honey. We're holding people up. How about this kind?
No.
What is the matter with you people? If you're not going to do something, I am. Get out of my way.
Every day, drivers and their families all across the country are killed on the roadways because of road rage.
Boy, they did a beautiful wedding.
Oh, yes, and they made such a lovely couple.
Excuse me, is this the receiving line?
Yes, it is.
Hey, he cut in line.
I'm a friend of the bride. Do you know the
group? Hey, pal, you cut in line.
Buzz off.
Oh, yeah?
He hit that nice man.
That'll teach you to cut in line, you jerk.
Stop the senselessness of road rage. It's time we all drive with the same courtesy we extend to people in the rest of our lives. A message from the AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety.
Have you ever thought about turning your Glock, XD family, or 1911 handgun into a semi-automatic carbine? It only takes about 30 seconds. The MacTech Carbine Upper is classified as an accessory and can be delivered right to your doorstep with no FFL or background check required. It's the world's most versatile pistol accessory. Build your custom upper today. Simply go to handgunconversion.com. That's handgunconversion.com.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau de Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus doesn't grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system. And it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. A one-pound package of tea is $34.95 plus shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. That's shop, S-H-O-P, super, S-U-P-E-R, T-T-E-A, .com. So the complete website is shopsupertea.com. Or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5 California time. That's shopsupertea.com at 818-984-6100.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
Science Fantastic. Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Our special guest today is Dr. Seth Shostak, Senior Astronomer at the SETI Institute, which is the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. So, Seth, what do you say to people who say that the aliens could be millions of years more advanced than us, and radio? That is so 20th century. And they could be part robotic. They could be quite different from us, but yet we always assume that they're just like us. So, what are your thoughts to those people who say they were barking up the wrong tree?
Right. Well, I have to admit that that's a possibility. It's always a possibility. I mean, there were suggestions even during the Victorian era that we should try to signal the, you know, the residents of Mars with big gas lamps and mirrors and things like that. And today that looks, you know, kind of quaint. But the people that were suggesting it were the top physicists of that era. So, of course, anything we do is always comes with this little footnote that, well, maybe this is the wrong way to do it and that the aliens will be communicating in a completely different manner. But that depends on the physics. In the end, you can only do what the physics allows you to do. And if you say, well, they've got subspace communication, which they always have on Star Trek. You know, if you go to the Stanford library here and look up subspace communication, you don't find anything except in fiction books. So you can't build any equipment for subspace communication if you don't have the physics behind it. So we do the best we can. We use the physics we know, which says, well, communicating by radio or lasers or something like some other form of electromagnetic communication is probably the most efficient way to send bits of information around the galaxy.
Okay, and also, of course, the United States government has been releasing videotapes of encounters with UFOs where we now have the metrics by which, frame by frame, we can actually analyze what these objects are doing, and these objects seem to be, well, who knows, extraterrestrial. So what are your thoughts, because you must get a ton of email about from people that claim that, yes, they're not out there in outer space, the aliens are here in our backyard. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, if they were here, that would certainly change my daily job description, I think. And you're right, it would actually be maybe job security for me, because if they're nearby, then you'd think it'd be much, much easier to find them and maybe even communicate with them in some way. But all the information that we've seen, all the data that we've seen that suggests that maybe, you know, aliens are cruising our skies are all very controversial. The latest Navy videos, you know, maybe that's an alien spacecraft in the middle of the field in this infrared gun sight camera, or maybe it's an internal reflection in the camera, or it's a twin-engine jet a couple of miles ahead of the Navy jet, and the infrared camera just shows it as a peanut, you know, on the screen. I mean, there are many other explanations, and unfortunately, that means you cannot say with any conviction, yep, those are aliens, because it might not be aliens, and this is too important a question to take sort of, you know, wishy-washy evidence, which I think it is, and say we've found the aliens.
And, of course, there's the famous Fermi paradox that if they're out there and they've been buzzing our airplanes or what have you, then why don't they simply visit us? I mean, if the galaxy is teeming with advanced civilizations, then why don't we bump into them? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, you mentioned the South American societies that were actually quite old and quite advanced at the time that the Spaniards began, you know, sending ships to Mexico and to South America, and you know, they might have collapsed, but there was no way to keep that information secret. You couldn't go to, you know, Montezuma himself and say, look, Mont, or Monty, or whatever they call them. You know, you really can't tell the public about this stuff. You got to keep all the information secret because otherwise they'll riot in the streets. Well, I don't know whether they'd riot in the streets or not. I personally don't think they would, but in any case, there was no way to keep that quiet. So I think that if the aliens really are here, then the evidence for that would be very, very obvious and not just obvious to, you know, pilots working for the U.S. Navy. I mean, you know, all sorts of people should see them.
Okay. Well, let me tell you, let me ask you your comments about my spin on this whole question. I think that if they're that advanced, they would have digitized themselves thousands of years ago. They're immortal because their personalities, their memories are all digitized, and they can put their digitized soul on a laser beam and shoot it at the speed of light throughout the galaxy. And so if they land on the moon is only seconds away. Mars is only 20 minutes away. The nearest star is 4 years away. They could colonize the galaxy at the speed of light. And what's on the moon? A mainframe computer that downloads their digitized essence into an avatar. And the avatar is superhuman, super handsome, super strong, whatever, and can then begin the process of building a civilization on whatever moon, whatever planet, whatever atmosphere, whatever gravitational field, because they are avatars. Avatars with the memory, the digitized memory and personality of an alien civilization. So what are your thoughts about the fact that they can colonize the galaxy at the speed of light, and they could download themselves in avatars, in which case they could assume any form they want? What are your thoughts? Because, of course, we have to open our eyes to the possibility that these aliens could be millions of years ahead of us. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I happen to agree with a lot of that. I think that the only difficulty is having that supercomputer on the moon to receive this information and then to, you know, either build it, as it were, build those aliens represented only by a string of bits being sent from one place to another, you know, sort of reconstruct them into something. That requires, you know, getting that machinery somehow to the moon. So there's a problem there. But I certainly agree with the whole premise that, you know, in the movies, whenever we see the aliens, they always have a lot of mucus and they're clearly biological. And when you think about what we're doing in this century ourselves in terms of machine intelligence, yeah, I think it's fairly reasonable to say that most of the advanced aliens are not biological.
Okay, so Seth, once again, thank you so much for being on Science Fantastic. And go to their website. What's the website of the SETI Institute?
It's just SETI.org.
Okay, there you have it. Once again, our special guest, Dr. Seth Shostak, Senior Astronomer at the SETI Institute. And this has been Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Go to my website, mkaku.org, mkaku.org, and find out about my latest New York Times bestseller, The God Equation.
Extend your life with Extend. Extendivite really works. Here are some reviews from Amazon.com. John Hess, 5 out of 5 stars. Awesome. Probably my only review, but at age 40, I was getting bad heart throb and left arm pain, mainly before bed. I even stopped smoking and drinking sodas for a month, and that didn't work. After one day of taking Extendivite, it was gone and hasn't returned in 3 years. I've ordered Extendivite 13 times, so Amazon just said. Juliet Hordick. I've ordered this product before in liquid form. It is fantastic. My whole family's been on it. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with